Welcome to the Reality Revolution. I'm so excited today. I finally get to interview Raphael Eliason. Raphael Eliason is one of the first people I ever asked to interview, and I had just started my channel, so it was a long time ago, and finally I got a chance to interview him. Raphael is a sort of hero of mine. If you check out his channel, he's been talking about motivation and self-help, and he's been doing it from a very young age. And I really wanted to get an idea of how somebody starts at such a young age with such wisdom. And so check out his channel, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. So welcome to the Reality Revolution, Raphael.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. I'm so excited to be on. And it's really amazing, I have to say, to have watched you grown and the level that you've gotten to, and just remembering where you started. I remember when you originally reached out. Just amazing. So
I think I
props to
had
you.
10 subscribers at
Right.
when I
Yeah.
first.
It's just very early on. As you can imagine, a lot of people reaching out. I have to, be
I
a
get
little
it.
filter a little bit, but now your audience has grown and it's just amazing
Right.
to see what you've done. So
When you
incredible.
look at this industry that we're in, a lot of people kind of start at a later age, or they get going in their 30s or 40s. But you decided this is your life's purpose at a very, very young age. And I just always wanted to talk to you about that process when you woke up and said, this is what I want to do. Because it took, I mean, I'm sure convincing your parents was a little bit, and deciding, hey, I'm going to go and I'm going to be motivational and start a YouTube channel and be a motivational speaker. That's not something that somebody your age. Now, when did you start?
2014, and I was 19 years old, so I dropped out of
19. So
school.
you
Yeah.
weren't even at 19, weren't even in your 20s yet. And you dropped out of school. So tell me a little bit about that. I'm fascinated.
Yeah, absolutely. So really, I dropped out. I decided that's it. I can't take school anymore. That was the first big step for me. I'd spent so I'm originally from Norway, but I'd spent 1 year as an exchange student in the UK. And I just realized, even then, but back in Norway, I already knew school isn't for me. Like, I hate this. This is horrible. Some person that isn't even qualified telling me what to do with my life doesn't make any sense for me. So I dropped out. I took a job as a janitor. It was the only job that I could get. I tried to apply to literally everything else, but it was the only job. So I was cleaning floors and scrubbing toilets at the school that I went to as a little kid. Ultimate embarrassment. My teachers are looking at me like, what a disappointment. My parents, they think, what's going to come of him, right? This is terrible. I can't believe this is what my son is turning into. And really, it was painful. It was shameful and painful, and I was just dragging myself through it. But I knew in the back of my head, personal development was like a passion of mine. So I was watching all these videos. Back then, there wasn't as many great channels, but there were a few. I was watching everything. I was reading everything I could. And I just felt this pull, like, I need to help people, because my life was really bad. I remember I was obese, so I lost about 65 pounds. I was really socially anxious, so I was extremely scared of talking to people. And I also just struggled so much mentally, with depression as well and other just negative thinking a lot. And the moment that it all clicked for me was one day I just thought, enough is enough. Like, I need to change something. Nothing's gonna happen. No one's gonna put me on. That's what I realized, right? If I just continue what I'm doing, I'm going to continue to get what I've gotten so far. And that's when I decided. I threw my, video game controller against the wall. I snapped my disc of the game that I was playing at the time, which was FIFA. I was pretty addicted. I'd play for 8 to 16 hours a day when I could, right? So I was just going and going. And that's when I decided I'm going to make videos every day for a year. And it changed my life, right? I didn't know what coaching was. I didn't know that this was my ultimate destiny of some form, right? I didn't have any idea in my head of what it would look like 10 years from there, but I had some dreams and visions, right? I saw Les Brown, I saw Tony Robbins. I thought, wow, that's cool. This is cool. I just went for it. Uploaded every day for 6 months, no response, crickets, 100 subscribers, mostly friends and family, maybe that felt sorry for me. A lot of people making fun of me, 6 months of nothing really. And the next 6 months, I did six figures. So only with a small channel of about 1,000 subscribers, I started messaging every person. Like, I really grew my business quite quickly. But the key switch was, I'm going to take this seriously. I'm going to make something out of this. And I started joining masterminds and getting coaching and, people really showing me, here's what you need to do, Raphael. And I did it. I followed through. And before you know it, the results were there. It wasn't actually that hard. The technical execution was pretty easy. It was the mindset and the limiting beliefs and just all the internal garbage I was carrying that made it really difficult.
Right. A lot of people on the same path in the first 2 or 3 months after seeing nobody watching their videos or no subscribers, they just bail. It there's something inside of you that says, I really don't care what anybody else thinks or how many people view my, I'm just going to continue with this. And it starts, I see that all the time. I see channels that sit there for 6 months and then something happens. There's just, once you go through that process, there's something that happens. So my question is, when you decide to sort of be a teacher, there's a great level of learning that occurs. You when you decide I'm gonna help other people, but you're at that young age, right? You learned a lot in that 6 month period, right? There was a massive amount of learning that went on, just as much as you were teaching.
Of course, I would say much more learning. Like, mm-hmm. you know, for every 10 pieces of content I was watching, I would maybe be putting out one at most, right? Often I was consuming 100 pieces of content to make one. So I was digesting all the information, taking all the best sources and learning from them, and then going, okay, I think I have an idea of what might work. And I wasn't telling my clients, oh, I'm going to change your life, right? From day one. Right. I was saying, hey, if you don't like it, you can get a refund. No reason. You don't even have to give me a reason. If you don't love it, if you don't love working with me, it's okay. I'll give you your money back. No pressure on me, right? Why? Because I don't want to create a situation where I have to be perfect. And when I was making the videos too, I wasn't setting this ridiculous standard that a lot of people have nowadays where it needs to be cinematic and, you know, very well produced. Mm. It should be like a Hollywood movie. That's crazy that you'll never get going that way.
So well, I will say your videos are beautiful.
Thank you.
You're in Norway. You have some beautiful imagery in your videos. One of the reasons I was drawn to them is that they are beautiful. That's for sure.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we work hard on making them look pretty. Nowadays, we shoot a lot of stuff inside too, you know, against this wall that we're recording against right now. So it doesn't have to be complicated, but of course it helps when you make them prettier and more fun to look at. People are going to get engaged even more. In the beginning, though, I think it just has to be the minimum viable product, right? Just as simple as you can, mm-hmm. least amount of resistance, just the smallest amount of effort to get going. Just like when I started meditating, I didn't go for 20-minute sessions twice a day right away. It was like mm-hmm. 5 minutes minimum every day. That's it. Just a little minimum. When I started working out every day, 30 calories a day burnt. That's it. That's all I need, right? Some momentum, not life-changing, drastic results day over day.
Who was your mentor? It doesn't have to be somebody you actually talk to. A lot of times our best mentors are people that we read or we watch videos of, but who was it during that initial period that flipped the switch and transformed you to who you are today?
Oh yeah, I think it was really just everyone around me, right? I mean, I think my parents, as much as I'd give them stick and say, oh, you didn't support me when I was starting, that pressure of, hey, you got to get results, right? Like if you actually make a sale and you get clients and you replace your income and you make more, and then I make more than them both combined, and then I make more than the doctor, and then I make more and make more and make more. Of course, you know, that speaks for itself. So that pressure, I think, was healthy to some degree. And in another sense, it might have been quite traumatic and scarring in the beginning. So it probably was a downside at first, and then it became actually a benefit. But a lot of the people that influenced me, you know, Jim Rohn was one of my favorite speakers, just his style, right? I just loved it. It was so elegant the way he would speak, but it would be so down to earth. So he was one of my favorites to listen to. Sadly, he passed away. So I never got a chance to actually see him in real life or go to a seminar. So that was one of my big inspirations and influences. And then I had a lot of marketing coaches and sales coaches. That was important because I think for me, what I was drawn to in the beginning were other life coaches, for example, right? That was a big one. Mm-hmm. And some of them actually were really helpful. If you know the likes of Ralph Smart, Infinite Waters on YouTube, he was one of my early mentors. You know, I would do one-on-one sessions with him and pay for that. Very helpful. But what really changed things for me, what really gave me like breakout results, like incredible, big, big change, it was getting people who were really skilled in something specific. So when I hired someone that really knew how to run ads, or I hired someone that really understood mindset, or I hired someone that really understood, you know, marketing and sales tactics that really work in today's landscape, or with YouTube or with Facebook ads, just specifically targeting an area and trying to get good at that. Now, don't get me wrong. A lot of the masterminds that I joined were very like broad, and there was a lot of good advice there too. But for me, I would have to credit like, you know, the Facebook ad specialist freelancer that works for, I don't know, $100 an hour and just does this like as his thing, and he really understands it and he knows his craft. I have to give those people a lot of credit because they changed things for me drastically too.
It's a hard thing at the beginning of this process to trust other people to be involved in your work. And so you had to do that early on. And it is sort of empowering, but at the beginning, there's a part of you that kind of doesn't, you want to take care of everything yourself, right? So you're putting a lot of this burden on someone else, and you attract people into your life that are there to help you. But there is a stepping stone. Some people really struggle with it, trusting other people to bring in and to enhance their own organization. Did you go through in that a little bit? Like, I think I did. I mean, I just sat and did all the work for a long time, and, you know, it took me months to realize, okay, I don't need to do this. I can have someone else and I can actually trust them to do it. So there's this period of time where it's kind of hard to do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm just nodding my head the whole time because you couldn't be more right. I mean, it's spot on. It's so scary because, I mean, you don't even know if you're doing a good job, I think, when you're starting, especially, let alone judging somebody else's work for you and if it's worth the money you're spending. And, you know, am I just going to nowhere here? Am I just spending my money and not going to get results? It's scary. And these big decisions where, you know, you might pay, I did this where I paid agencies like $6,000 for a month of marketing, but, you know, I'd grow my account by maybe 10,000 like real followers because we ran ads and we did it the right way. So I would have huge benefit and upside. It's just still always scary to leap, right? Because whenever you have to think about a decision like that, you see the downside for sure. You know for sure the money, you have to pay it. Right? You know for sure the time is invested. You're gambling on this person a lot of the time. And you don't know the upside. Your mind cannot guarantee the upside. So you only see, hey, this is what I'm going to lose. And it's really hard to genuinely preview. And that's the ability of people who can really, you know, use the law of attraction correctly and get into the right mindset, is they can preview the result just as well as they can preview the downside. And that's difficult. It's hard to do because all the proof just points to, hey, I know for sure I'm losing this money, and we don't know for sure that the results will be there.
So that brings me to entrepreneurship, which is one of the main things you talk about, and it's your part of your experience. I hear a lot of people that talk about the law of attraction that have never started their own business. And in many ways, I think that entrepreneurship is like the key to attracting the life that you want. Instead of depending on someone else to do whatever it is, you can try to attract a job where you work for someone else. But in almost every case, when I'm coaching somebody or talking to it, it comes down to, hey, don't you want to be your own boss? Don't you want to take that next step? And it's beautiful and wonderful, but it's hard and scary. And so I want to get an idea of your path towards entrepreneurship, because I want everybody to know that anybody can start a business. You don't even have to have a lot of money. A lot of people have these beliefs that they can't start a business, that they need millions of dollars to start a business, that it's too difficult, it's too complicated. They create all of these excuses and they do it. And so it's really fun to talk to somebody that's been through it. Because if you have the entrepreneurship on your side and you become an entrepreneur, you can use the law of attraction and all of these things to your benefit. It's really, they're designed together in some ways. I want to get your perspective of that.
Yeah, it's very true. You even see a lot of people just have limiting beliefs around the fact that maybe they're not good enough to be their own boss, or that they're too lazy because of a bad experience they had maybe in school, right? I was a very low effort student. I didn't try very hard. I told you, I hated it, right? So you might think, you can't be your own boss. You need somebody else to hold you accountable. You're not going to make any money working for yourself. You can't even make a decent living working for someone else. But that's not true. A lot of the time, you know, we're really just playing a role that we're bad at, right? I think, you know, I love football, soccer, I guess, for the Americans, for you guys. You know, if you put a striker as your goalkeeper, yeah, I mean, you're asking for it, right? I mean, you're setting yourself up to just lose. And if you play players out of position, they're not trained to play that role. They're not naturally gifted at that role. You're going to have a bad time. So what do you do? Well, you put them in the right spots. And if you're lacking strikers, you might want to sell off some defenders so you make room for a striker. Right. Well, that's not how we think in our life, though. We think, well, I'm just like this, and this is my experience of me. And I have all these reference points that point to, I'm not going to be a good entrepreneur, right? I don't have the money. I don't have the skills. And it's just all BS, genuinely. I mean, none of that's true. You've made up a bunch of conclusions in your mind because you had some bad experiences and you have this identity that you really want to hold on to. You know, your ego really wants to control your life. So you cling on to it. But if you can just let go and say, what if? What's the opportunity? What might happen if I just give it a shot? What if I didn't expect anything either, but rather just focused on the process? And that's what I did. I just focused on the process, right? When I did the daily videos, all of a sudden I ran into people that could help me with the marketing and the promotion. When I did, you know, the coaching calls and just helped clients, before you know it, I got people paying me what I wanted to get paid. Mm-hmm. So it's not about waiting for some point where you might be good enough. It's about just taking the journey, learning on the way, and growing into the person that you need to become. Because the version of you that makes, let's say, for a lot of people when they start out, I have a lot of clients too, when they're early on, they'll go, I want to make 100K a year, right? From my passion. Right. That's a big one for most people. And getting to that point, it's actually not that hard technically, but it's the mindset of who you need to be and how you need to operate that really matters. For example, a big attachment that I had was, oh, I need to get paid by the hour. That's the only way that people get paid. If I'm going to coach people, it needs to be paid by the hour packages. And I did that, and it was very limiting, because when I focused on an end outcome, right, here's the result I can get you, all of a sudden I could charge way more and make way more. So it's just all these little shifts that need to happen, and they can't happen if you stay there and wait. So if you're even just a little bit curious about exploring entrepreneurship, I would urge everybody to just give it a try, because you can do it on the side. I didn't quit my janitor job until I replaced the income. A lot of people say, you know, make the leap of faith. I would not say that when it comes to covering your basic necessities and living, right? So I would cover your basic living expenses with your job and then start your business on the side. Those 3-4 hours in the evening, even 10 hours a week, that's enough. That's all you need. That's all I had, right?
That's so true.
Nothing special about me.
So something else that you deal with, that I think is a fundamental part of that, the journey, the entrepreneurial journey that I'm struggling with, you can coach me, is that sometimes you realize right now I need to take a break. I need to relax. I need to be a little bit lazy. Especially, of course, over the holiday, I was like, you know, I'm sitting here watching, I'm having a good time with my family. I need to sit and watch Wonder Woman with my kids right now. But then there's that little nagging voice when you're an entrepreneur and it's all on you, and it can kind of work against you. And so I've kind of learned there's a balance. You kind of dealt with this on a recent video. I wanted to share your perspective on that. What should I do if I'm constantly, because I know I want to work hard. That's not hard for me. It's easy for me to work hard, right? It's hard for me to be lazy. And a lot of people that get in. So how can I properly be lazy but not jeopardize my business?
I love that question so much. Yeah. And it's funny, when you start out, you're like pushing yourself, and that's what's getting the results. Right. And so you keep doing that, and it reinforces, hey, when I strive, I get growth. And when I relax, I lose, right? I don't make as much money. I don't impact as many people. And we make that association. And so we have to untie that knot. And the way that I did that for myself, and that I've done with quite a lot of clients, I would say a few hundred by now have gone through this that I've worked with. So it's a common issue.
Yeah.
It's by associating the time off as productive. So let me show you what I mean. If every time I sit down to, I don't know, drink a cup of tea and watch something on the TV, or if every time I go outside for a walk, I think to myself a thought like, oh man, what about this in my business, right? That's creating that pressure again. So I have to rewire myself that when I go to relax, here's one that I used, so you could steal this.
All right.
I literally just tell myself, this is just as productive as working. I love that one because it's so straight to the point and it's so clear. And all I do is every time I go to relax, this is how I wired it into myself. This is just as productive as working. And then I just smile, right? Because it's like, I'm giving myself permission that, hey, resting is crucial. Like, this is important. This is valuable time. And what that does is it, you know, kind of undercuts the loop in your brain that's constantly thinking more, 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 keep pushing, keep working. And it just goes, hey, this is actually just as valuable. So if you don't do this, you're going to be, you know, overworked, exhausted. I remember times I got RSI, a repetitive strain injury in my wrist, because I would take so many notes with clients, right? Writing so much content, just pushing. I would destroy my vocal cords by doing coaching for 12 hours straight every day. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. I mean, I got my 10,000 hours in by the time I was like 24, I guess. So that's good. But the downside of it, yeah, it's not worth it. You know, your health is everything. So for me, just consistently repeating that thought loop of, hey, this is just as productive as working, right?
Well,
just
it's one of the reasons we work hard, right? So we have the freedom to be lazy.
Exactly. If you're working hard, point, what is it for?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the whole point was to make a life that you loved, and then you made, you know, yourself a slave to the business, right? I've done that too. And we just got to get out of it.
Right. I love it. So you've documented pretty well the mindset that you need to be in to stay as a high performer. And that a lot of that, I think, really relates closely to my channel. We talk about reality creation. And so I think your perspective is unique because you've been through it. So, you know, it's pretty generic and cliche to say, oh, think positive. You got to think positive and motivate yourself. And you know, talk to me about how you, going through this process, you've created some dynamics on thought processes, thinking positively and applying those things that Jim Rohn told us about, and you know, to the modern day in this social media world where we're constantly barraged with information. How do you go about changing your mindset in a positive way that is effective, not just cliche? Does that make sense?
It really does. Yeah, I think in levels, Brian. So the way that works is I just categorize my thoughts into three groups. Level one would be harmful. And that doesn't just mean, you know, self-hatred or criticizing yourself. It's anything that's just not good, right? So it might be a thought like, oh, it's going to take a long time before this is successful. I'm going to have to work really. Is that really helping me? Like, what benefit is there to that thought? Zero. I mean, it's just pressure. It's just a burden. The fact that that's running in my mind, I have control over that. I can get conscious and aware and change that. So category one is harmful. The second category is neutral. So that would be a thought that just basically doesn't have a negative or a necessarily positive connotation. It might just be like, this is okay. You know, I feel okay. It's very neutral. It's very flat. It doesn't have any crazy stuff tied to it. And then of course, the third category is positive. Now, not positive in the cliche sense where you force it over yourself and you try to push yourself into thinking the right thought. What I do is actually work through any harmful thoughts in depth to unwind them and resolve them. And most people don't do that. And that's really sad, because if they did, then it would be like, imagine you're climbing a mountain. I use this analogy a lot with clients. Mm-hmm. And you've got this big backpack on, right? And you think, this backpack, I got to bring it. I've always had this backpack my whole life. I grew up with this backpack. Got to climb the mountain, got to bring the backpack. You climb, you're getting exhausted, right? Here I am, I'm your coach, I'm with you climbing up the mountain. I tell you, hey, you know that backpack, what's in there? And you go, I don't know, stuff. And I say, well, do you want to look? Oh, no, I don't want to look. No. This is, the backpack's your brain. Right? I don't really want to see what's going in there. I don't really want to analyze it. I don't want to break it down or work it through. It's uncomfortable. Now, let's take a look. No. I pull it off you. Open it up. What's in there? A bunch of rocks.
Right.
You're exhausted. You're climbing up. Why are you doing this to yourself? I might ask, right? And you say, well, I didn't know. That's what a lot of people say. They didn't know that they were doing it to themselves. So many entrepreneurs and people that I work with that are even doing, you know, multiple six, seven figures. And then you hear something like, well, I don't know why I was stressed. I don't know why I'm stressed. I don't know why I'm upset. I don't know why I feel these emotions. Well, let's find out. Right? It would make sense that we should examine what's going on. So let's look at these rocks. Do you need this rock? Oh, no, I don't think I need that rock. What about this one? Probably not useful either. Okay, this one though. Do you need this rock? No. So pretty much we can throw all that stuff away and climb and have a much easier time than we otherwise would have. And the way that I do that process is, where does this thought originate? What was the first experience that I had that might relate to this thought? So let's say, I'll give you one of mine. Nobody's gonna listen to me. I'm too young. That was one of my first big negative thoughts that I spotted. I was like, oh, look at that rock, right? I got help. This wasn't me by myself. I can't take the credit. I got, you know, therapy, coaching, like those are the tools that really helped me see this. But I realized, hey, I'm carrying this rock. I'm too young. Nobody's going to listen to me. That's clearly harmful. What benefit is there to that? So then I analyzed it, like, okay, what's going on here? Where is this coming from? Well, when I was young, you know, if I would give advice to an adult, they would laugh at me. And as a kid, I actually had a tendency of trying to fix problems for adults. So I would sit with them and listen to their life problems, and that part they liked. But then I would start to tell them what I think they should do. And here's this little 5-year-old, 6-year-old Raphael telling you, you know, as a 40-year-old man, maybe, or a grown woman being told, hey, I think you should do this. That doesn't really work too well, right? It sounds kind of weird, and right. They get resistance. Well, that makes sense. But little child me doesn't know that the disapproval of those people isn't relevant to the grown adult version of me, right? Or young or grown teenager, right? You could say as well, or young adult. It doesn't really get that, hey, you're not that person anymore. You have different status, different position. You're a different person altogether. You have a lot of experience. You do have things that are valuable that you can share. So when I got on camera or when I was on the coaching call, that was the thing. And it was blocking me constantly. So how did I resolve it? Well, I went back. I looked at that. I said, hey, does it make sense that I have this belief based on the experiences I've had? Those are my reference points. That's all I have. So yeah, it makes sense. It's fair that I think that way because I have proof that tells me that's what happens, right? You're going to get judged. You're going to get laughed at. This isn't good. Don't behave this way. But is this useful to me now? No, of course not. I'm grown. I can help people. I can make an impact. I'm holding myself back because of this rock that I'm carrying. All right. Am I willing to let it go? That's a great way to put it. You can put it many ways, but one of my favorites is just, am I willing to let it go, or will I allow myself? That's another one, because it's like I'm giving myself this gift of letting go. So will I allow myself to let this go? Yeah, of course. I don't need this anymore. It's old. It's outdated software. It's from, you know, 2001. I don't need this. Gone. Yeah. What do I want to install now? And then I would take the belief that I wanted and I would put this in as the new system that would run my brain. So instead of, hey, I'm too young, I would say, it's so great that I'm starting young. I have such an advantage over everybody that waited and procrastinated because they didn't feel ready. They didn't feel validated. They didn't feel certified enough. So they waited. They waited. And meanwhile, I just did it, right? And that for me was so, I love that. You got to find one that resonates, that really gets you going, right? You can't just throw a random belief in there that doesn't really click. It has to feel meaningful. And for me that, oh, I have an advantage here. That was positive. And it doesn't, see, that's not the most high conscious, beautiful, like Zen-like belief. It's kind of a competitive one.
Right.
But it was a good one. It was much better than the one I had. And then you can always upgrade later. So sometimes you need to be driven by, I'm going to, you know, prove my family wrong, but not in the sense of I'm not good enough, let me prove them wrong. Rather maybe that, hey, if I do succeed, I will be an inspiration, right? I will have, you know, this incredible gift that I can share with them. The person that I'll be will be authentic, right? That can be great too. So yeah, just reinstalled one by one. You see how long that process was explaining it? Imagine it took, you know, a good, I would say 2 to 3 hours a day. Oh. Sometimes just working on this stuff. It sounds crazy, right? Most people, oh, I wouldn't sit down to think about my thoughts or analyze my brain for 10 minutes. It's uncomfortable. I was doing it for hours. I would write 1,000 words on the new belief that I was installing and why it was important to me. So I wasn't just joking around here going, oh yeah, I should probably think better. I wasn't saying, oh, think positive. I was really implementing it. I took it so seriously. And it's because I realized that because of that belief, I can't do anything. I can't express myself. I feel stifled. I feel uncomfortable. I feel like I'm not going to be heard. And when I removed it, all of a sudden, this is pretty easy. What happened there?
I love it. So one of the processes that sort of occurs as you become successful that I have really found is the power of no. And I even meet a lot of people that are super successful, and it's not what they're doing. It's what they're saying no to. They have sort of have a singular focus, and they have things that come up, and it's so easy for them to say no, even though it kind of looks like they shouldn't be saying no. So have you encountered this? Give me your advice on how I can learn to say no Sometimes that's the best thing I can say in certain situations, especially with what we do. You get to a point where everybody wants your help. Everybody wants to do stuff or has advice for you. And it's hard to say no. These are people you might care about, you respect, you know? So I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, so this is going to be a dirty trick right out of right out of the playbook. But it works. It works so well. Most of the time, my default response, I'd say about 90 to 95% of the time when there's a decision to be made with somebody else asking me for something. So let's make sure that's clear. Not talking about my goals. Those are very clear. I just follow through. It's simple, right? But whenever there's an inbound request, my default is swipe right, which means in the inbox, you know, if you have the same Gmail app that I have, it doesn't matter. What I really mean is I just archive stuff. So I just swipe right, it goes green, and it says basically archived, which means I'm not going to see it. So if I want to look through stuff later, I can go to my archive. I didn't delete the stuff, but I'm probably never going to look. So it means that what comes in usually kind of just gets archived. And that's a good thing because, yeah, I mean, if you say yes to too many things, you can't really focus on the ones that really matter to you. But really the ultimate, you know, the trick that I was talking about is saying, let me get back to you on that over and over and over and over again. And it's such a cheat code because what are you going to say? You know, nobody can really make it awkward on you. What can they do? Oh, I need an answer by Monday. Ah, that's fine. What I'm doing is stalling. Why am I stalling? Well, because half of the time when people ask you stuff, or they want something from you, or they want your attention for some reason, they're just going to forget. It wasn't really that important. They just disturbed you because they had an impulse. And so they just, oh, right? They felt that impulse and they were like, oh, let me ask him this. Did they really need to? Was it really important? Probably not. And when you say that, if they don't get back to you and they don't follow up and ask again, probably didn't matter. Now, this sounds horrible, right? To a normal person, like they hear that and they're like, I wouldn't want to be treated like that.
Right.
But here's the thing. It depends what position you're in, right? So if you're starting out and you've never ran a business or you've never really been busy with your life's work, yeah, that sounds horrible. It's like you're ignoring people. You're just pushing them away. You should care about the people around you and the people that reach out with opportunities. You should just take that as a blessing and say yes to everything. No, because here's the problem. If you act like that, you'll forever stay where you are. Mm-hmm. So you have to behave as the person who is successful already. So who you want to be that person now. Now, is that person relatively busy working on their own thing and focused on their passion? Probably. Are they saying yes to all kinds of random opportunities all the time? I mean, unless you're like an opportunist and that's your ideal self, probably not. So you would mostly just focus in your lane. And then when you really like the look of something, it would be, you know, it'd be a clear yes for you. It would be a resounding yes. So for me, just stalling with a little sneaky, let me get back to you on that, resolves. I'm giving away my tricks now. Now everybody's going to know, but it's great.
It's our secret. You know, it's nobody just, has to know.
Yeah. Right? No, don't tell anybody. Nobody's going to hear this, right?
Right.
So yeah, it's just, it does let it kind of fade out. Any background noise, anything that's not serious and important. And the people who really want you or the people who want to talk to you, or if you later remember something, right? Like I saw your channel again. I was like, oh, right. And instantly I'm like, let's check it out. And if you had been like, oh no, I don't want, you know, I'm too busy or I don't have time, I would have respected that. So sometimes you miss out and you will regret it later. It could be that somebody, you know, gets to a point, and if you had built that relationship earlier and given them a little bit of your time, that could have made the difference. But that's like saying, if you invested in Bitcoin in 2000, right? Like you could have been a millionaire. Okay, yeah, great. Right. And who knew that that was the right choice? I mean, there's no way, right? So we don't live our lives like that, hopefully.
So there's sort of a dynamic that occurs, especially in personal development, but everybody listening to this interview is having something similar. We're in an age, and you're probably better at helping me to go through it, just like I went with my kids. Everybody in this age has to deal with social media. I've watched the social experiment. I know about how these social media companies work in manipulating chemicals in my brain. And also it's a part of our business. We need to like that post. We need to share that new thing on this new platform. So now I got Instagram, I got MeWe, I'm on TikTok, I'm on Snapchat. I'm, you know, following up, making sure everybody's contacting me all the time. And there's a part of me that knows that this is pulling away from my success, that this is pulling away from my time and energy. I'm losing some creativity. It's sort of mind numbing. And there is definitely this barrier that I'm encountering. I know I need to share my stuff and I want to expand my tribe, you know, but there's also the part of me that is very aware of the mental aspects of dealing with social media. Now, of course I can have other people and I bought and, you know, designated, but sometimes there's a personal touch to it. There's a part of me that says, maybe I should just ignore some social media. There is a dynamic that needs to be dealt with. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I really do.
And I want to know I don't think there's a right answer. I mean, I want to know your perspective because we can't bail on it, right? That.
Yeah, you know? I love that you said there's not a right answer because there is no right answer.
Yeah.
But in my perspective and in my experience, you know, for me, it changes over time. So you have to ask yourself not what's right permanently, but what's right for you now. And the problem is that people want ultimatums and, you know, they want a total decision. They want one decision that's going to carry over forever. And it's just not realistic. So let's say you're just early in your business right now. And let's say you're in the personal development space and you want to get some clients. Well, it might be a good idea to be on TikTok. You know, it's a booming platform. There's a lot of free traffic to be had right now. If you just make good content, you're probably going to get views. On YouTube, on the other hand, you might have to have a good click-through rate, good watch time. There's a lot of metrics that play in. And it's a lot harder to do well organically for free with no existing audience, right? So it's more challenging. Doesn't mean it's not doable. Doesn't mean you couldn't win with YouTube if you started from scratch. You know, right now, today, even you could do very well if you followed the formula and did the right work.
Right.
But what I'm saying is it might be easier to go a different route. And so what I ask myself is, okay, what's my ultimate goal, right? What's the real thing that I'm going towards right now? And again, that changes over time. Hopefully, if you're hitting your goals, you got new goals, right? You don't just keep the old goal. You might have a vision, overall vision for your life, but hopefully your goals are getting met and hit, and then you continue and you renew. So in that case, I might ask, okay, if I'm trying to grow my audience, I might want to be on these booming platforms because that could help me really explode. But if I just want to hold steady and my audience growth rate is actually pretty good, and I know that I don't necessarily need more views or traction, and really I should focus on polishing, you know, let's say my program or getting clients better results or working on myself and my health more, and maybe not spending as much time on the business, if you know that's the real thing that you need to do, then yeah, I just adjust. So that means ignore all the new platforms that are booming. Stay with the ones that you've already built, right? I've had a YouTube channel since 2014, still post there once a week. Even if I did nothing else, I get enough clients and it gets maybe around, you know, a few thousand views per video. You still be okay. You don't even need that much. I mean, I had 100 subscribers and already I got a breakthrough. I had 1,000 subscribers. I was already doing really well. So it shows that you don't necessarily need this huge tribe or this huge audience to do well. If you just polish your message, if your call to action is good, if your offer is positioned well, if what you're saying is genuinely impactful and helpful to them, that's just as big. So sometimes people just think, okay, biggest amount of followers possible, biggest email list possible. I have a friend, he's a coach. He tells me this story. This partly breaks my heart, but partly makes me cry in laughter, right? It's a very weird situation. He tells me, Raphael, I've been doing these collaborations with these YouTube channels. He learned it from me, by the way. So it's quite funny. He would contact these YouTube channels that had huge audiences and he would give them his content and they would promote it. Now he would pay them for it or he would, you know, compensate them in some way. And he did this and it grew his email list to, I think, around 50 to 60,000 people. Very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a guy who had a total amount, you know, say subscribers were maybe around 20, 30,000. So his email list, which, you know, probably only 10% of your audience would maybe be on your email list typically.
Right.
All of a sudden, it just explodes from this traffic. And that all sounds really great until you skip forward maybe about 2 months. And he's telling me, I'm removing all these people off of my list. I have to delete this email list. And I go, what? What in the world? Why? And he says, well, look, it costs money to have an email list. You know that, Raphael, right? You pay for how many subscribers you have. I'm like, okay, but surely the profitability of how many people you have on your list would outweigh that. Actually, no. Most of these people You know, they don't even buy a thing for $10. Most of them will never buy anything from me. And I've tried, right? I've made the offer multiple times. Mm-hmm. I've had different angles. I've tried it. They just don't have buying power. And I go, wow. So you have an audience of 60,000 people. And a lot of them look at your content and they open your emails, but they're not buying. And so what was the point in that? Paying a bunch of fees to have a huge list, do all this work, right? Now, did he get some clients? Of course, right? Of course. But I've seen this done multiple times. It's not the only person with that story. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you run ads, sometimes you do all this work and it doesn't necessarily pay off. Sometimes you might make a TikTok every day for a year. But what if none of those people turn into customers? What's the point? Well, you got likes and validation. Is that really, you know, the point? Are you trying to create a validation business? You know, it doesn't run on money. It doesn't run on serving customers. It just runs on getting approval from people. Right. I mean, that doesn't pay the bills and it doesn't expand our team and it doesn't, you know, help us do what we do better. We can't polish our skills off of that. So yeah, I don't aim for fame. I have had speeches that have gone viral and reached tens of millions of people. Doesn't necessarily mean anything, right? I have videos that have over 1 million views. So what? Doesn't mean anything. Most of the videos that get me clients have 1,000 views on them. Mm-hmm. Most of those are the ones. Ask people, like, where'd you come from? Why are you deciding to spend all this money with me and work with me and get my help? You know, what really convinced you? Oh yeah, it was these 15 videos where only maybe 500 people watched them. And like, these are the ones I've been watching, or this podcast I listen to.
So the next thing I wanted to ask, there's sort of a phenomenon, and you've encountered it coaching, where somebody does find success and they sort of rest on their laurels. They reach a point where like, I don't need to be any more successful. And I see them start going down. It's like, there's the next level where you need to, even though you're super successful, you want to keep on going and maintaining and creating new goals. A lot of people struggle with that. They reach a certain point and then they stop. And so I wanted to know if you've encountered that, if you've had clients going through that and what your advice is for them.
Well, I think we have to ask why they're stopping.
Right.
What happened there, right? And sometimes you find out that it's because they genuinely need to slow down, like we were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. right? And then the other side of things, which is, you know, often what it is too, is just, you know, the mindset. There's a block, there's a glass ceiling. There's this identity that's so firm that says, hey, I can't make more than X amount per month. Mm-hmm. And you might not be thinking that consciously, but in the back of your head, because of what you've seen your whole life, let's say your family struggled with money, or it might be anything, right? And it's just programmed you to be this way. So we have to find the root cause, you know? That's what it comes down to. And once we know, here's why, it's unique. But once we know, then we can start addressing the issue and actually dealing with it. Because the worst thing that you could possibly do in a situation like that, and I've done this before, I am so guilty. I mean, it really, you know, it's quite bad. It's embarrassing, really. But I've pushed clients and said, come on, let's, you know, I remember this. I was so into that motivational stage, like, well, you just got to push through it. Come on, keep working, work harder. Is this all you're good for? Right? Like, kind of almost like pressing and humiliating, like that doesn't work. I mean, it might work temporarily, might give you a little boost, but if you don't find the core root issue, what's the trauma, what's the tension, what's the limiting belief, then yeah, I mean, even if you get a little boost and you go for a while longer, eventually you'll burn out. Mm-hmm. So we got to find the root cause, and I keep looking and digging until I often say why times three. So what that means is your first why is not the real why. The second why is not the real why. The third why usually hints at the real why, and you can go from there. So when you say, okay, why are you stuck here? All right, let's say you get to $10,000 a month and you get stuck. Well, what's wrong? What's going on? Why are you stuck here? Why can't you progress? Oh, well, I don't know. I'm not getting enough leads. That's a good one. Why are you stuck at $10,000 a month? Oh, well, the people that come to me aren't qualified and they won't buy from me. They don't have the money. Nice one. That pretty good excuses, right? Great. I love it. Keep coming. Maybe a few more of those sometimes even. But a lot of the time, the third one might be like, oh, well, actually, I'm really comfortable at 10K a month and I don't really need to make any more money. I'm actually good. That might be the reason. Or it might be, you know, let's say you're practicing a skill. You want to get really good at guitar. And you just kind of plateau there too. Like, why don't you keep playing? Why don't you keep learning? Why do you just play the same songs over and over again that you've learned? I'm uncomfortable. I like these songs. They make me feel warm. It's a real reason to plateau. Now, does that mean that you should go further? Maybe not. Sometimes that's what we have to evaluate. Maybe this is enough. Maybe 10K, 20K, 30K, 50K. How much do you need? Like $350,000? Is that way better, right? Sometimes you have to think like, am I there? And can I just maintain and be happy? I thought about that with my physical health, right? Like I said, I used to be obese. And for me, my weight was a big problem growing up. And I figured, you know, I need to get ripped, right? Jacked. I need to have huge muscles. And then I can, you know, now, then I can feel great about myself. And as you can see, I don't have huge muscles at all. I'm just a normal skinny dude now. Now, what happened there? Well, I just got to skinny dude and I was like, this is great. I just thought to myself, this is the best thing ever. I love this. And then I looked at like the work that it takes to be, you know, just absolutely like so strong, jacked out of your mind, like what that requires, the work ethic and how much time you have to dedicate. And I figured, I don't really care about that. I just want to live to 100. That's really all I want. Just be healthy, live to 100. That'd be great. That's my goal. Yeah. What do I need? Cardio, lifting weights. No real evidence from what I've seen. I mean, I'm not perfect at going through all the research, but from what I've gathered, gaining a bunch of muscle doesn't, you know, let you live longer or help you live longer. So I figured, okay, well, your heart, work out, you know, get your heart rate up so that your resting heart rate is lower. Perfect. Didn't need to get jacked. Why did I want to get jacked? Oh, the validation and the approval that was attached to it. Right. Might be the same reason why we need to make $10 million a year, right? So we can ball out and look cool so that everybody can give us validation and see how amazing we are. So yeah, we got to find out why. I think the why is really what drives everything.
So I always like to steal habits, especially from somebody that's been focused on personal development like you for a while. So you have a daily ritual when you wake up in the morning, when you first drink your water. I want to know your daily ritual, like when you get up, when you meditate, what you eat, what you do when you go to sleep mentally. What is your program you've found success with?
Sure. So let's get controversial. All right. I wake up at noon. Right. that's a pleasant response. Yeah. So a lot of time people are shocked, like, oh, not 5 a.m. I've tried it. I've tried pretty much everything. I like getting up at noon. My association to that is I'm my own boss. This feels great. I'm totally relaxed. There's no pressure. There's no stress. I don't have to rush to anything. I get to decide how my day looks like. This is my ideal day. I like a late start. I like working a little bit in the evenings. I like being up somewhat later at night. Those hours are really beautiful for me. Works great. Naturally feels great. I sleep really well in those hours that I sleep. So that works for me. Doesn't mean it's the right fit for everybody. So maybe noon isn't perfect for everyone. When I was a janitor, I sure wasn't waking up at noon. I didn't have that much control over my schedule. But that core habits, the most important ones that I would say, you know, really responsible for a big chunk of my success. Wake up, work out right away. Got to work out right away because you move your body, the blood gets flowing, your brain starts operating right away. Otherwise, it's kind of like, you know, starting a chainsaw that's just kind of rusty and old. You know, if you're trying to get your brain going off of no physical momentum, it's much more difficult. You might need coffee or another source of stimulation. But if you just, I don't know, for me, I would row, right? For 20 minutes or so. There you go. You know, your body's moving, so the blood goes, and there you go. So great start to the day. Then I would usually meditate. So work out. Actually, I missed something there. That's critical. When I'm working out, usually an audiobook or some type of healthy content, just to start priming my brain for good stuff. And you know, you might as well, it's a two-in-one, it's a free win. So work out with an audio, meditate, and then plan my day. And when I plan my day, I usually already have an idea for what I wanna do, but I wanna make sure that my calendar shows in those hourly blocks exactly what's gonna happen. Because if it's in the calendar, it's getting done. If it's on the to-do list or if it's somewhere floaty in the sky, not happening, right? So serious stuff that's gonna get done, it's scheduled. And it's concrete. Now, I like being more relaxed and intuitive. I'm the kind of person who really enjoys a little bit of chaos and kind of, you know, spontaneity, just go with the flow, right? I love that. But let me tell you something, that sure does not work for sustainable long-term growth in key areas of your life. So I don't do that. I don't wing everything. Now, I might just have a rough outline. I might put work on content. That's okay. But the more specific you can get, the easier it is. So when I really struggled, I would be, you know, record one video that's 10 minutes long about how to stop procrastinating. That's very specific. That's really much better than make video, right? Or make content or create something. That's very broad. So as you advance, you might be able to get looser with it. In the beginning, I think you need to be quite specific to make sure that you get it done. But that's really what it comes down to. So I have a little, there's a word for it, and maybe you can reveal it to me because it's escaping my mind. But it's these letters. So it's W for the workout, A for the audio, M for the meditation, and P for the planning. And that turns into WAMP. With a W. Right. And for me, I would just write WAMP at the top of my journal and every day, little tick. So I WAMPed. I did the WAMP. The WAMP is done. And for me, I just thought that works really well because I know these core ones will carry the momentum into the rest of the day. Now, back early on, I would also add in, like in the whole first year, every day, I would write a self-image exercise. So that was one key that I didn't tell you here, where I would basically just write out exactly who I wanted to be as if I already was that version of me. So confident instead of, you know, anxious. And I would just get really clear. Who is the ideal version of Raphael? How does he show up? What does he do? How does he talk to people? Everything, right? Every detail. And that was part of it. But eventually I let that go because I pretty much embodied my ideal self and started acting as that person every day. And so I felt very redundant to write about who I was all over again. It was kind of weird. So yeah, once I crossed that threshold, I dropped that one, and that's when it turned into WAMP.
So a lot of people don't know this, but I had the same schedule as you. I wouldn't go past 12 as I always felt like I want to be at least waking up in the morning. But the secret is the blackout curtains, right?
If yes, you're in a room, absolutely. That's clutch.
The secret, a lot of people don't know the secret. Yes, I agree. You can. That is actually a great routine. Go to bed. Two or three.
Yeah, exactly. Right? I love that.
But now, the blackout curtains are the key, man, because the light comes in. Exactly. I'm in a room that is just so bright and it's like, so I was like, please, I want to sleep. Right?
Exactly. And also one thing that goes with that too, is like the room temperature and the, you know, in the bedroom should be cool so that you get proper rest. I live in the country, you know, in the north of Norway.
Right.
Our closest neighbor is like, you know, 50 meters, it's quite far. So it's quiet. I think if you don't have peace and quiet, like earplugs, even if you can't get blackout curtains, you got to cover your eyes. It's not like a blindfold, right? something to make sure that, you know, a mask of some kind of sleeping mask, that'd be great because yeah, you want to make sure the sleep is really high quality. That's for sure. You're right about that.
So I'm just so jealous. Norway is one of my favorite places in the world. And it's probably a great place to be right now with everything going on in the world. It always has been. So what a great place to be. So I just want to thank you for coming on and answering my questions. And I've learned a lot from you. I want to let everybody know they can get a free consultation by going to eraphael.com and check out Raphael's YouTube channel, Raphael Eliasson with two S's. And there's you've been putting out videos for a long time. So there's tons of incredible videos and you'll learn so much and you cover a whole bunch of different things, so many different bases, inspiration, motivation, proper thinking, and your journey in entrepreneurship. All of it is good. And I just want to thank you for teaching me, and without your teachings, I wouldn't be where I'm at because a lot of what you did motivated me and taught me, and I followed how you started your channel and helped me to start my channel. So thank you for that. I really appreciate that, Raphael.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. Honestly, such a pleasure. Like I said at the beginning, just watching your growth and seeing, you know, how far you came since that original message, it made me so happy inside. I thought even if we don't have a conversation, you know, I was just so happy. Just so such a warm feeling in my heart. You know, when you watch someone where they start and you see where they're at later, it can blow your mind. And for me, it really did. So I'm so glad that what I shared in any way could positively impact you. And I'm so happy to be on and sharing this with your audience as well. So I really appreciate you.
Well, thank you very much. And can't wait to talk to you again. We'll talk to each other again very soon, I promise, because there's lots more stuff that we didn't cover on this. But Rafael Eliason, guys, everybody check him out. And welcome to the Reality Revolution.